It's Tuesday evening, and that can only mean one thing. It's Dynasty Points back at it. No Lucas, but boy, do we have a substitution for you guys today. A true running back savant, someone who I have felt since our first conversation with him all the way back a couple years ago for the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast, someone that I thought always took a unique approach. He was the first of the Isaiah Spiller doubters that I knew. And well, I've been following his advice ever since. Before we get to that, look, we had a question. Why does it keep getting pushed? I was waiting for confirmation. All right. Shout out to everyone that was first. We see you in the comments. We love you. If you haven't been here before, make sure to hit that subscribe button, hit the notification button. The list of guests coming up is absolutely insane. Obviously, our guest today, Noah Hills, next week, Scott Barrett. After that, JJ Zacharies. And after that, Graham Barfield and the guru himself. We always bring you the best guests in the business. That's not even close. It's not even close. So if you want to hit subscribe, hit the notification bell. I, of course, am your host with the most time in his hands. I am Thomas Sibley. You can find me at El Noster Thomas. And my fun fact of today is I was once on tour with Brett, the Hitman Hart. That's my fun fact of the day. That's my flex.
That's a great fun fact. I'm kind of shocked you haven't used that one yet, given all the episodes we've done that. I'm Jacob Sanderson. My fun fact today is that on this day, March 19th in 1994, the world's largest omelet of all time was cooked in Japan. And I love omelets, so shout out to omelets.
Wow. That's a huge omelet. I'm reacting to your fun fact. This is like an emote. My name is Noah. I forgot what I'm supposed to do during this introduction, but you can find me on Twitter at NoMoreParties and at NoMoreParties.com. And my fun fact, I was reminded that last year my fun fact was that I saw B.O.B. at the airport once. So in keeping with that genre of fun fact, I will share that I once saw Sean Bradley, 7'6", former member of the Dallas Mavericks.
Second overall pick, I think.
Yeah, big goofy white guy, Mormon from Utah. I saw him at a theme park in Utah with his family, apparently on like vacation together, all wearing matching t-shirts. It was like... It's like a sea of like 20 white people with like a giant one.
Your fun facts.
Before I knew before I knew what they looked like respectively, just growing up with like no firsthand knowledge of 90s basketball and just purely knowing that the names were similar, I always got Sean Bradley and Sean Kemp mixed up. And then once I saw a photo of Sean Kemp and a photo of Sean Bradley, and I was like, wow, that was pretty dumb because they don't look alike.
More opposite. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Sean Kemp has a lot of kids, though, and Mormons have a lot of kids, so they probably have that in common.
There you go.
That's common. By the way, Tom, if you want a screen share, I have a photo pulled up here of the world's largest omelet. It is indeed pretty large.
Oh, my goodness.
Look at that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, wow.
Pretty big.
It looks like a quesadilla.
A little bit.
It does kind of look like a quesadilla.
160,000 eggs is crazy.
Jeez.
You're getting breakfast.
Yeah, ketos. The ketos would be loaded up for that.
Little butter in there, little feta. Oh, baby, call it a day. Yeah. Not only do you get great Dynasty content here, you're getting great breakfast content here. So I just want to, again, shout out people in the chat. Raymond Reese, he was second. I mean, love the lineup. We love that, too. Hey, Thomas stashing the fun facts. Look, if you want more wrestling content, as a retired professional wrestler, I can bring it to you. I will bring it to you if you want it, because I got some good ones. Obviously, there's 672,451 pieces of news, and there's just as many articles, podcasts, tweets, and information about out there on news. We are not a news program. You can get that on other programming at Fantasy Points. We like to dive right into the good stuff, but I would be disingenuous for me not to allow Jacob to just quickly mention the hilarity of the Chicago Bears / Justin Fields.
No, that's fandoms. For Lucas. Look, despite the Twitter allegations against Justin Fields, we're only here to talk about running backs today.
There it is. I knew if I set it up, you'd
know. That's down. For Lucas, for me to gloat about winning my bet with Lucas. I'll save that. And I will say that despite like my past Justin Fields haterade as a dynasty asset, that I think that there were a lot of teams that were really fucking stupid for not giving a higher than a 6th round pick for Justin Fields. So that's my olive branch to the Justin Fields community. But I will let you guys know I'm spending my $100 from Lucas. for our bet on what the Bears would do with the number one pick. But let's get into the other news. It's a little old now. We're going to talk about free agent running backs. We're going to talk about draft yes. running backs since we have the running back aficionado with us. I before I get into the micro, I often like to hit the blunt once and pontificate about the larger meaning of different NFL trends. So, you know, I always love your perspective on the position, Noah. So what do you think when you look at this year's free agent cycle, how fast everybody signed, sort of all these players moving on all these different teams and shuffling around? What do you take away from that in terms of how the NFL is valuing this position and how the market might be shifting?
Yeah, I honestly, I hadn't even really thought about it until I read your little essay on it, I guess. And then when I was asked to think about it for the sake of this podcast, but the teams that kind of moved in free agency in a significant way with regards to running back, even using a broad definition of that, were mostly like contenders, aspirational contenders like the Texans and the Packers, or teams that are like in position to add like a quarterback that they hope to be a franchise quarterback. Like it wasn't a lot of like floundering average do nothing teams hoping to like change their franchise's fortune by signing Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley. And maybe right. those teams were like in on discussions. We don't know. But just from who ended up with the bigger name running backs, really like the Giants are the only one that spent even significant money. And that wasn't that like, that was Devin Singletary. Like it wasn't that big of a deal.
And that's, and Loth, the best, arguably the best running back who left. Right.
Right. Right.
So still a massive downgrade.
Yeah, exactly. So like, I don't know if that actually means anything, or if it's kind of indicative of the league, maybe collectively having figured out that like, this is kind of like a supporting role position to like build a supporting cast, I guess, around a centerpiece quarterback. And otherwise it doesn't really matter and we shouldn't care. Like, I don't know if that's indicative of anything. Maybe it's not a trend, but that's kind of my theory.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense in terms of those teams that were making those pushes, right? With the Texans for Mixon, Packers for Jones, the Bears looking to transition into a new level of their team, right? Especially interesting when you look at, you know, regimes like the Bears, right? Where last year, it's the same regime in charge, same coach, same GM. They look at it as though probably they're not very close to contention that year, right? That's where they end up trading the number one overall pick. They get the haul. And at the running back position, they let Montgomery walk, signs like a very modest deal for the Lions. I personally would argue that I would rather have David Montgomery on the deal that he's on with the Lions than DeAndre Swift on the deal that they just signed. But either way, philosophically, they look at it, you know, and they decide to give a shot to Khalil Herbert, their talented backup. They bring in Roschon Johnson as sort of like a mid-priority rookie in the fourth round. Whereas this year, they're looking to level up and, you know, they come to the conclusion that DeAndre Swift's going to help them do that and clearly approach the running back position differently than they did last year. So, which is interesting and interesting with a team like the Titans as well, right? Where they're on this rookie quarterback window. That's the one that's the most curious to me is exactly what they were doing. You know, this is not necessarily the question on the show sheet, but I'm just curious on your thoughts, since I'm maybe a little bit biased as a, you know, Pollard backer in the past. Like, did you find that this fit was weird, or have you found the same patch of like hopium that I'm starting to sell myself on with their vision for this offense?
I think a little bit of both. I think it is kind of weird. It's almost like a weird version of those Shanahan Atlanta backfields where like Tony Pollard's kind of Tevin Coleman and Tyjae Spears isn't exactly Devontae Freeman, but he's like a little bit more satellite backy. And so it's like two kind of tweener running backs together, hopefully being like a full good running back, and they're both good, but they are kind of tweeners. So it's weird in that respect, but I don't think it's bad. Like, I think it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. I just thought it threw me off guard because I was fully expecting an LDD specialist, right? Like, I was fully expecting just a first and second down specialist to show up, and then they get two very similar play style running backs showing up. And it's not even like the money really blew you away. In fact, it was more money than I thought Tony Pollard was going. I was expecting like a 1 year type $10 million prove it deal after last year. And then he walks into some guaranteed money. I think that surprised me as well as the similarities in their play style, like you mentioned, it's that's what threw me off the most.
The 2 years of like, basically, I mean, it's not 2 years fully guaranteed, but the way the contract works is it'd be pretty surprising if he was not given 2 years. That was surprising to me too. Mm-hmm. But I think it was kind of fun to be on the other side. Like I've spent my whole life like upset that these like Joe Mixon types just like continually get more and more chances despite like being thoroughly uninteresting. And it was like a little bit nice for the NFL's love affair with thoroughly uninteresting running backs with a 250 touch season under their belts to benefit me for a change. So I've, you know, God, I've seen what you've done for Joe Mixon. Thanks for doing that once for Tony Pollard. But my hope with the situation is that they do have a plan and that they do look at it. And it's like, it was a purposeful choice to bring in two running backs with similar skill sets who can sub each other off. And that they're not just looking at Pollard and miscasting him into like, let's give him 250 carries in between the 20s and let Spears and just give him the Henry role and let Spears do that role. That's bad for everybody. You can pick the Titans if you want, but which of any of the running backs that signed with a new team, any of the running backs that maybe got impacted by a new running back joining them, who would you be most aggressively buying based on free agency? And who do you most aggressively selling based on free agency? Let's do the buying first to be optimistic.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, I didn't really have a good sense for this before I looked at the show sheet and kind of compared where my rankings are at to Keep Trade Cut and like Dynasty Data Lab. But apparently I'm slightly high on Derrick Henry, significantly so if you compare my rankings to Data Lab. And I guess before this, I didn't feel high on Derrick Henry. It just felt reasonable to me. But like, I don't see how, even if he's a slightly physically diminished version of the guy he's always been, this is such a perfect situation for his shortcomings to kind of not matter as much in the context of this offense and his strengths to be accentuated, or to be whatever that word would be. like the kind of dancing in the backfield that he's not good at when kind of a play breaks down, or, you know, having to make like, you know, hard, quick cuts in the backfield, those kinds of things that he's not good at don't seem like they're going to be as much the case in like the relatively wide open Ravens rushing attack. And then he's good at being impossible to tackle when he's up to speed. And that's also what those big lanes do for you. Like J.K. Dobbins and Keaton Mitchell have killed it in the last couple of years because they're fast and they get to run straight. And Derrick Henry is the same way. And then selling, apparently I'm a little low on Joe Mixon. I have him down in like Aaron Jones range in my rankings, like low 20s, where kind of these other sources seem to have him in the high 20s or the like the high teens. I think I'm just not convinced that he is that good, like at least anymore. Like I think at some point in time he was a solidly above average NFL running back, maybe even an actively good one. But his best years did not coincide with good offensive lines. And lately, he just is kind of an average guy who does everything. His yards after contact and missed tackles force numbers have been like declining each of the last 3 years. I'm not confident that this situation is any sort of improvement where we should expect him to be better than he's been. And you know, just the fact that he now needs to be incorporated into a new offense where he hasn't been and there hasn't been an existing role like this kind of makes me sour a little bit on him continuing to be as useful as he's been. So like, I don't think he's going to be bad there, but I'm not that excited about it.
He's a volume play for sure. I think that's just the case. I mean, you look at Devin Singletary, I don't think he provides much more than what a Devin Singletary would have, maybe a little bit more in the passing game, right? Maybe they feel like they can keep him on the field for 70% of the snaps, which I mean, I would too if I had Damian Pierce on my roster. Talk about an absolute face planning dud. It's over.
I still believe in Damian Pierce as a player. It's over. I don't believe in him on the Texans, but I believe in him in a theoretical different team than he manned an offense. Go watch his kick return touchdown last year. Tell me that dude sucks.
In a different universe, maybe. Yeah, he had like an 80.
He had a 90 short or kick. 80, whatever yard kick return touchdown, and it was like, oh, Damian Pierce just scored a touchdown. And I was like, oh, like maybe he's taking the job back.
He,
and
then he played on offense. Wow.
And I was like, that's interesting, I guess. I was like, oh, we've done the Tony Pollard career arc backwards in 8 games. Yeah. Like, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, damn. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that, though. It sounds crazy.
Yeah, when you're excited that a player that has a rookie rush for 1,000 yards got on the field to return a kickoff for a touchdown, and that's what makes you excited, though.
Well, I was excited from like the from a standpoint of like intellectual curiosity. I actually find the Dameon Pierce thing like fundamentally interesting because I thought his prospect profile kind of go either way. I thought he had some high notes that some of the data people didn't like, and you know, I was really impressed by his first season. Like, I didn't really like his price, so I luckily wasn't drafting a ton of him. But I thought he was a really good player, and then him just like being actively bad and then being outclassed by Devin Singletary was just one of the more genuinely surprising things to me of the 2023 season. So like, just seeing him do the kick return was like kind of like a fun little okay, like what happened to this guy? And I was no, he stole some juice. So I think it's a lesson in I don't really know what yet. Like, I'm saying I think it's a lesson in scheme fit, but you know, TBD. So I hope we get to see Dameon Pierce somewhere else.
Well, and maybe I was just like missing this on Twitter or not listening to the right, I don't know, football podcast or whatever. But was anybody projecting that this was a bad scheme fit before he just wasn't playing? Did I just miss that? Cause I wasn't anticipating it being a bad scheme fit, but it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the, you know, you never know until you see it. Right. Yeah. Like, I think it's like, I had some level of concern about, are they going to do a lot of the outside zone stuff? Because, I mean, the thing is, we don't really know. Like, Bobby Slowick comes from San Francisco, but he was the passing game coordinator, right? Like, I don't know how much compared to Kyle Shanahan and Anthony Lynn and Mike McDaniel. Like, I don't know how much input he had into the run scheme. So it was really hard to say kind of what he had to do with any of that. But, like, you know, if I was building an outside zone back on paper, it wouldn't look like Dameon Pierce. But, frankly, it wouldn't look like
Devin Singletary.
Yeah. Right, that's what I mean. So, like, I think part of it is like a matter of, you know, are you comfortable to sort of like navigating as you go in space? And like watching Pierce early in the season, like he just looked pretty uncomfortable to me, but I don't know if we could have like known that. I mean, yeah. I guess ultimately, like if you just bet against like fourth round running backs off of good, not great rookie seasons, like for eternity, you're going to hit more often than not. But I still don't know if that explains why he looked so brutal last year. But
There was legitimate concern for Mixon when he got there too, but then I talked to Brett Whitefield, obviously he's our lead charter. And then after talking with Joe Dolan as well, it's more of a Mixon and the blocking scheme in Cincinnati and the O-line more of the problem for that zone scheme from what they were doing. They said that he can still be effective in it, which is why I'm not as concerned as Mixon as some of his numbers have seen. I'm going to trust the charters with that, but not enough to really be buying in. So I'm in with Noah on this. As much as I don't think he'll just be an absolute plotter there in a good offense, I'm agreeing with Noah here that I'm probably the least excited. I will say though, in terms of on my dynasty rosters that he already exists, I am happy that he's not in the UFL or the CFL and that I can still throw him in as an RB2 or a flex most weeks. This kind of does save his value because it was either like, please God, let him stay on the Bengals or you're just sitting with the dead asset. So
my guy was going to be Derrick Henry, but since Noah took him, I'll just say a couple things about Zach Moss, who is like completely free. And like you get him for like a third round pick, basically. Here would be my take on Zach Moss. Like I watched every one of his carries last year because he played for my Indianapolis Colts. I was stunned how effective he was. Like I've used Zach Moss. Like I made a thing called the Zach Moss corollary, which is the corollary to sucking. Like, it's not a good thing to be part of the Zach Moss corollary. Like, so I was genuinely stunned when he was as effective as he was last year. I don't think he's probably that effective in most situations, but the Bengals like didn't gain anything from cutting Mixon. They gained $2 million net from going to Mixon to Moss. So that's a move that you only make if you just genuinely believe that you don't want Joe Mixon as a part of your team anymore. Like whether they think he's bad at football, whether like they're tired of his like crime spree across the state of Ohio, like whatever it is, they just didn't want to deal with it anymore. And they also show that they still value having like a big slow man as a part of their backfield instead of, you know, like turning it over to Chase Brown or trying to draft like an exciting younger, fresher player. So to me, they diagnose like Joe Mixon was the problem, but his plotting wasn't the problem. Something else was the problem. And they're going right. to change that with Zach Moss. So I don't really, all my cases for that, like, I don't think we should be trying to play like ESP with coaches at first round pick values. But for like late two, early three values, this is the team where the dynamism of their offense flows entirely through Burrow and Chase and Higgins if he's there. I think that they've proven overall the thing they care most about is reliability at the running back position. And like Zach Moss is going to be a reliable option. He's gonna get what's blocked. He's not going to get a little bit more, but he will get what's blocked. And if you're telling me who's getting the goal line carries, and I mean, we've all seen the Joe Mixon expected fantasy points memes of like him getting 20 expected fantasy points per drive when he gets four shots from the 1 yard line and fails on all of them. They hand the ball off a ton at the goal line. I promise you, Zach Moss is probably the stuff. The guy that's getting those opportunities to get stuffed at the goal line over the smaller Chase Brown. So I'll shout out him. Yeah, I think that'd be my.
I'm very pro Chase Brown in this scenario because his only obstacle is Zach Moss. So you can't tell me that's not like a movable object.
Oh, he's pretty big. I don't know. You try to move Zach Moss.
Fair enough. Look, I just have a lot of them and I need to spin my propaganda. All right. But they're,
you know, like Chase Brown's a buy too. I think both of those Bengals running backs are buys, to be honest. Like, because they could easily, one could fail and the other one's getting 70% of the touches and or one could get hurt. Like, you know, I think it's a good situation to attack. Let's talk a little bit about this rookie draft class, which I bet is what people are most excited to. Yeah, first of all, people say the 2024 running back class sucks. Do you agree? Yes or no?
Not really. I don't think it sucks. I think it's definitely below average. Like if we, you know, out of 10 random classes, this is not going to be in the top five. It's certainly not in the top half of the last 10 actual classes. But I think it's like more 2019 than it is 2014. Like there are interesting guys here at the top. And it goes like 8 to 12 deep with guys that I think will probably be something in the NFL, like something useful on your fantasy team. And yeah, that probably doesn't look like, you know, Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs or, you know, Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey. Like it's not one of those, but like Jonathan Brooks, Blake Corum, especially if we knew we were getting 23 Brooks and we knew we were getting 22 Corum, that is a fantastic top two in my mind. And so there's the, you know, the kind of injury uncertainty discount or, you know, whatever you need to do to their profiles that knocks them down a little bit, but even like, you know, Benson, Lloyd, Wright, Allen, like Shipley, like these are interesting players. It's not like, this class is far from barren.
My dream, as you just went through those list of names, is that some team on day three of the draft takes Frank Gore Jr., Jalen Wright, and Marshawn Lloyd, and they build the Frank Lloyd Wright running back by committee.
they'd have to cut everybody else on the roster to do that. But that's
how you architect that committee. I tend to agree. Like one thing I got into a discussion with, I can't remember who now, but someone had said like, if you just lopped off Gibbs and Robinson from last year's class and then compared the rest of last year's class to this year's class, like which would be stronger? And my take is this year's class. I think it's deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've mentioned on shows previous that I think this class lacks the elite back. Like every year we can kind of fall on, okay, there's, not every year, but generally speaking, there's like that elite bell cow back in every draft that everyone is happy about. And then usually someone kind of sneaks in at the back half of round one. It was James Cook a couple of years ago, right? It was Achane last year. He kind of snuck into the back half of round one. Now it feels like that the top bell cow back in this class is the guy sneaking into the back half of round one. Which doesn't mean they're going to be terrible. I mean, again, look at Achane. He's blown up in value to a fifth-round startup pick at this point. So not saying that it can't happen, but I don't think Noah's right. I think if we're getting, right, the 23, like you said, 23 books, 22 quorum, I think we'd be more than excited about having two legitimate backs going on day two. Maybe not day one, right? We always hope for day one. Doesn't necessarily even mean day one backs are super, super dope because, well, we've all been clowning Najee Harris for I don't know how long now. Day one doesn't necessarily mean elite.
No, it hasn't. No, but... loves Najee Harris. No, Najee Harris is Noah's favorite. That's like the Najee Harris is Noah's favorite running back to ever grace the earth.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far, but maybe relative to performance, yes.
Oh, boy.
This will be the first year of my life that I'm like pretty in on Najee Harris at cost this year. So I'll be joining you.
Well, it's not a round four pick. So I mean, I'm in.
Well, he's not a round four pick. And, you know, no one's going to talk about it because the people who talk about the advanced running back metrics, you know, we have our meetings on Thursday nights. We swear an oath never to spread the Najee Harris good word. But the liberal media doesn't want you to know that he was actually pretty efficient over the back half of the season once he got started being used in a committee with Jalen Warren. So, you know, so he's trending up, Najee Harris. I think he might not be totally horrible. And he's going to get the rushing quarterback efficiency bump too soon, which will work in his favor. Enough about Najee Harris. I do think the other nice thing that this running back class has going for it is timing. Like, I guess it won't happen yet because they just gave Joe Mixon like $13 million for reasons. But at some point in time, the 2017 running back class is going to get out of here. At some point in time. And it's 2024 running back class is like uniquely suited to take advantage of that, where unfortunately the 2020 running back class that was supposed to be great all got injured and died. And then the 2023 running back class was supposed to be great. The NFL just said no thank you to like all of our first round Debbie picks from 2 years prior. So I think there's a lot of window of opportunity for these 2024 guys. My question is, like, once you're in this tier, right, you kind of agree there's no elite guys. What are you primarily prioritizing when you're looking at what imperfect running back you want to try and target? Like if you're looking for certain traits or are you looking for guys that are better all around, like what do you try to latch on to in terms of more of these depth kind of round two rookie pick type running back prospects?
Yeah, I think this year I've kind of resolved to put much more of an emphasis, or at least like keep it in kind of the back of my mind at all times, that these guys need to have something that makes them active on game day first and foremost. Like I think that's my big takeaway from the Zach Evans experience is,
yeah,
he could be as good at running the ball as I think he is, and we would have no idea. I might be completely wrong and he's actually bad at running the ball in the NFL, but we don't know either way because his, you know, lack of pass pro or like his complete inexperience on special teams, especially at the beginning of the season, he was worth keeping around on the roster for, you know, some reason, but there was something missing where he couldn't, he wasn't even a game day active. So I think first and foremost with these guys who are like good at something or, you know, talented, but not quite elite, or they have some warts to offset some strengths. Like, so they're not like sure things to be on the field getting touches day one. They need to give a coaching staff a reason to activate them in the first place. And maybe that's just like the most basic thing to consider, but I think it's kind of underratedly important, maybe only by me, but that's one thing I'm keeping in my mind. And then as an extension of that, reasons to get on the field once you're active beyond special teams, like you might need to be able to pass protect. Or you need to be like your team's go-to like goal line guy, or you might need to not fumble, or you know, whatever it is, you need to be dependable in some area that earns you playing time in some way against veterans on your team. And it, like, especially if your primary thing is just running the ball, everybody in the NFL pretty much can run the ball competently, unless like save for like, you know, four guys in the league at a time who are just, you know, a total negative. Yeah. You know, guys like that. Other than that, everybody can run the ball. So like Dwayne McBride is another good example of a guy that I was like too enthusiastic about for this reason. Like he had a ball security issue. He never caught the ball. And as far as I remember, he wasn't really a special teams guy. Like unless a team was viewing him as like Nick Chubb and going to put him on the field on first and second down, despite the fact that he didn't do anything else, there's no reason to even have him in pads on game day. So that's one thing that I'm really, I don't know, trying to focus on this off season.
I agree with that. I think I was going to say something pretty similar. it's, you know, I think I used to focus a little bit more on trying to hit the home run at this pick and trying to focus on guys that could do as many things as possible in hopes that, you know, you can break out of that RB2 world into the RB1 world, potentially even as a cuff. I think what I'm trying to focus on a little bit more is, you know, kind of like you said, like, do you have a thing? Do you have something that you're just really, really indisputably good at? Because I think we do sometimes forget, I certainly sometimes forget, like, just how many, like, responsible adults there are that stand between you and even anything happening, right? Like, you look at, example, like, some prospects just fail out in ways that we don't even expect, right? Like, last year, the only Rams running backs we were talking about were Kyren Williams and Zach Evans, and all of a sudden, Kyren Williams goes down, and they're signing Royce Freeman and Daryl Henderson off the street, right? Yeah. If you're, you know,
and producing,
like, looks like he's betting on NFL games in his first week, and all of a sudden, like, they're like, all right, like, enough of this. Like, the Ernest Johnson, you're going to be the number two running back. So I think, whereas you look at a guy like, you know, Tyjae Spears, all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know, I still have questions, and those questions, well, I guess remain questions, thanks to the front office choices, about whether he can handle like a full workload, but at least he can do a thing, and he has like a legitimate skill set. And so you get to kind of build off of that. Something I've been trying to focus on with this class in particular, because very few of them I think are exceptionally impressive, is looking at running backs that I don't think are that great. How do they end up succeeding? And like, guys that I come back to are, you know, Rashad White is always like an example that I use of this, where it's like, he's a very good receiving back, legitimately very good receiving back. Do I think in most simulations of his career, he ever gets as much rushing work as he got last year? I think probably not, but it can happen. And part of the way that happens is because he gets his way on the field by having a thing. And so ideally, I'm trying to look for the players who have a thing and then have, you know, kind of enough around it that maybe can get lucky for the rest, but also really trying to focus on the players who at least do something really, really well, instead of like Bigsby is an example that I go back to last year, where I was like, yeah, like, what's kind of interesting about him is he does everything kind of okay, maybe. But then it turns out he does everything bad, actually. Probably trying to do a little bit of that. So with that said, top three running backs, at least in consensus right now, you can certainly dispute whether these are the top three running backs in the class, but by consensus right now would be, in some order, Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, and Blake Corum. What if any of these guys is a massive hit that we're drafting in, you know, the third, the fourth round of startups within a couple of years? You tell me, Noah, why is it that they're such a big hit? What happened for them? Tell me the story.
Okay. I mean, this is just, it's so obvious, but for Brooks and Corum, this, them being a massive hit necessitates that they are able to return to the players that they were pre-injury. I think I'm pretty optimistic about both of those things happening, but that's an obvious condition here. For Corum, I'm not really sure that I envision a massive hit. Which
this is the dream zone of the podcast, right? We don't. I'm from the future. Okay? Okay, I know I'm wearing like a kind of a retro Western shirt right now. That was me trying to honor your Idaho roots. But I'm actually from the future, and I've told you that we're drafting Blake Corum as the RB6 overall next March in Dynasty Startups. And all I need you to tell me is why, what happened for him.
Okay, I think he goes to a team in maybe the second or third round, because it's a team that is like in love with his football character and his work ethic and like who he is as a person and just kind of like his vibes.
Yeah, team in mind? That's true. Did you say this? Particular team in Los Angeles in mind?
I have two teams in mind. The first one is a team in Los Angeles with a guy named Harbaugh, head coach.
Right.
Who that's kind of where I expect Corum to end up, honestly. Like, I think Harbaugh has a Corum boner. I think he wants to make Wolverines West. I don't think he's going to draft JJ McCarthy, but I think he's going to draft Corum. And I think Corum would get fed there. I think he would get every opportunity to be the bell cow back.
He'd beat out Gus for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And Spiller, come on. And he would.
Well, look, there'll be enough carries for everybody. Everybody eats.
Sure.
Craig Roman's offense, baby.
but yeah, I think that's a situation that he kind of needs to be a massive hit, is for somebody to fall in love with him in that way. I also think that's possible in Dallas. I think Jerry Jones is of the, you know, disposition to fall in love with a guy, a national championship winner, and, you know, rah, rah, rah. I think that could happen in Dallas too. But I think that's necessary. And then he needs to be healthy. I think he needs a good offensive line, not because I think he was a product of the Michigan offensive line, but I think stylistically that's kind of something. Well, A, if we're, you know, envisioning a massive hit, that's kind of a necessary component of anybody doing that for the most part. But I think Corum doesn't strike me as a guy who's like a do it all myself kind of player. He kind of maximizes what a good offensive line is going to offer him.
Well, let's get granular. Like, part of the reason I'm trying to ask these questions is just instead of being like, you know, I like this guy, I don't like this guy. Like, I love like so many of your posts because they're so descriptive. Like, when you're viewing Corum, like, what do you see as his best attributes and what he brings to the table? And I know you're a pretty big fan of his game.
Yeah, I think two things. The first thing is his caveat that I'm talking about 2022 Corum here. He was clearly a physically diminished version of himself in 2023. I think he was still impressive from like a decision making and, you know, like reading the defense standpoint, just because he's good at that. But if we're getting the best version of Corum, we're talking about 2022 Corum. And I think his best kind of physical trait is his lateral quickness. He's got a mean dead leg. He's got a really nice jump cut. He's just such a sharp mover. He decelerates really well and then explodes kind of laterally off of that. He's very good at making people miss because of that. And I think he also has very good timing in that sense. And I think his other best thing is just like not fucking up. He doesn't do anything wrong. Like in terms of following his blockers, being exactly where he should be in relation to those blockers, you know, pressing to the inside to kind of suck in an edge defender before then bouncing in duo. He paces himself well on plays with pullers. He's just like a textbook runner. As far as I can tell, I'm not an expert, but as far as I can tell, he's just textbook. I had a tweet like in November, I think, where I said, if there was like an imaginary line that kind of drew out the exact optimal path a running back should take on each play, Corum's path would follow it closer than almost anybody else's. Like, he's just always right where he needs to be. And I think those two things together make him as good of a short yardage runner as he is, even though he's small, although he's really just short, he's pretty stout. And they also make him a good kind of inside runner in general and allow him to not take negative plays. He's so good. He's just really good.
I agree with everything. Like, I think he's a big like dude can ball candidate, which is, you know, kind of a little bit of the case for Achane last year. There like wasn't a lot of comps, you know, and he has nothing to do with Achane in terms of like stylistically, but I do think that there's like a conceptual similarity of like the issue with Achane was primarily size that people would bring up, and you'd be like, yeah, but he also like has this workload history. He actually doesn't succeed really in the same way that a lot of small running backs do. Like, he actually is really adding value on the ground and between the tackles. With Corum, the hard part that I'm trying to sell myself and others is it's one thing to be the like really sound pure runner who doesn't screw up when you're, you know, 6 feet, 220. It's another thing to be that if you also at 207 or whatever he is, if you also catch passes, is he boxed out of that fantasy ceiling if he's like, I don't know, Kyren Williams without receiving game? Like, situation.
Yeah. I think that's part of why his true upside is almost in some ways contingent on him finding a team that like really believes in him already. Because I don't know that he like has proven that part of his game enough to people who maybe like aren't already inclined to be bought in. But I don't think he's I don't think he's like a liability in that area at all. I'm not the pass pro evaluation guy, but I've been trying to keep mental notes just like as I'm watching film. He struck me as decent in that area. He's definitely willing. He's got a low center of gravity. Like, he has the body type for it. And you look up Blake Corum pass pro on Twitter. People seem to have good things to say. So I think that might be potentially could be a strength of his, at the very least, maybe not a weakness. And I also think, even though he wasn't used in the passing game a lot, he does catch the ball cleanly. I don't think he's ever going to be like a true weapon in that area, but he seems perfectly capable of like being, you know, your average check down option who can also maybe pass protect a little if that's also the case. So I don't think he's, I don't think he's locked out of it. I'm just worried that that part of his game will never be unlocked if he ends up in a situation where it's just easier to let him do first and second down stuff. And then they already kind of have a guy.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I will note too, like, he had 24 receptions his second year, and then he plays with Donovan Edwards, who I'm pretty sure you're not a fan of Donovan Edwards. Is that correct?
Well, okay. I was a little bit more excited. My ire with Donovan Edwards started with people thinking that he was better than Corum, and he just clearly wasn't to me.
Right.
And then it was just funny that he sucked so bad this year, but I've seen some report that he was playing hurt most of the season. So I'm willing to give him a mulligan. And I actually do think he's a good player, but yeah, I do think that's a good point.
I think clearly he adds juice in the passing games that they wanted to use him in that respect. Right. And so I think that's mostly the point I was bringing up about Edwards is they actually did use Corum, like, not a ton. And he had 6 yards per reception, but they used him adequately, not really meaningfully worse than Benson and Brooks were used, for instance, as a sophomore year. And, you know, then you ask yourself, like, well, what if Donovan Edwards shows up on Benson or Brooks' doorstep? What happens to them in junior and senior year? We don't know. Mm-hmm. But I do think that they had a reason to segment their backfield the way they did, with using Corum at things he was better at, Edwards at things that he was better at. And that probably happens in the NFL too, but I think it's always possible that they just decide to roll with him. I don't think he's incapable.
I was just going to say, I like Toronto Day's David Montgomery kind of situation, because David Montgomery is a guy who does everything well, but not exceptionally, but has also had great runs of sustained upper tier fantasy production when given the opportunity. So I just wanted to point out Dave's, not so direct comp to David Montgomery, which is kind of how I had him pictured as well, as I wait for Graham Barfield yards created to tell me if there's hope for that or not. I definitely like this spot. That is how I see him as a pro, which some people look at him really highly and, you know, some people don't.
Yeah. I don't hate the David Montgomery comp. He is kind of a smaller version of that, especially the way that he's like elusive and kind of like a side to side. And also he has like good contact balance. About the lack of receiving work thing too, I think it, just another point I would quickly make is Corum had an incredibly high workload both of the last two seasons, exclusively on the ground in like a pro style interior running offense, where he was facing some of the highest, like some of the, you know, most stacked defensive fronts of any running back in the country. Like, there are, you know, some bad excuses for lack of receiving usage. Some, there are better ones. I think having a guy who's great at that on your team, who, you know, also deserves to be on the field, and Donovan Edwards, is a pretty good reason for not being super involved in the passing game. I also think it's a decent, you know, reason or excuse that it's a little bit reasonable that, you know, if your role's going to be scaled down, it makes sense to do it in the passing game, given that you're so good and already so burdened with your responsibilities as a rusher.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Let's chat about the other injured guy. Where do you see as like Brooks's big strengths you think he'd lean on if he hits a big ceiling? How big do you think that ceiling could be?
I think Brooks could be really good. I think he has a, I don't know about a higher ceiling than Corum, but I feel like his ceiling is more attainable in different situations, in a bigger variety of situations than Corum's is. I really don't have concerns about like fatal flaws of any kind in Brooks's game. Like, he's just very well-rounded to start. He goes down a bit too easily for my taste. And he can be like a little antsy sometimes and like run into his blockers and like go before he should, especially on like gap plays with pullers and things like that. But overall, he's like such a smooth athlete. He's kind of similar to both like Zach Evans and Jahmyr Gibbs in the way that he just sort of glides up the field. Yeah. And like
well, has the this first sort thing of like, I wrote down was like he's a glider. Like it reminds me a bit of Aaron Jones's running style as well.
Yeah. 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 I've seen that comp a couple times and that's a good one. And he just has this kind of self-contained, pretty fluid, like elusiveness to him where it's not like he doesn't have to like stop and like make some really dramatic cut. Like he can kind of just throw a subtle dead leg and like throw a guy off by just a little bit. And I think that makes him, you know, kind of good, like on the interior, especially, for a skinny guy. And I also think he's a good and pretty versatile receiver. Reports of him in pass pro are also fairly positive. Yeah, I think for him to hit, I really just think he needs to end up on a good team. Like he seems like a pretty good bet to me, assuming he's healthy. And
yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. My one concern about him, what do you think of him? If like I know he comes in at 216, I don't know how seriously to take that, given he wasn't actually going to be doing any of the workouts, and no one was going to be reading into him not doing the workouts. My only potential red flag with him was that I didn't like some of the short yardage reps. I thought he was pretty upright. And he looks to me like I would take the under on him playing 216. Like he looked a little bit more of like the Pollard Hubbard build of like kind of the 6 foot 208, 210 type of back archetype. I think that he has like, you know, sometimes you see guys like that, like I've like the Hubbard Coleman build where they're more of like a slasher. I think Brooks is a more patient running back. I think he adds a lot in terms of being able to evade contact and how he sets up angles in short spaces, though, I felt like he didn't have a lot of pure power. And I am concerned, like if he's not, I think he's an adequate receiving back, but not elite. And I have concerns about the short yardage. My fear is that he becomes kind of a between the 20s guy. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that aspect.
Yeah. I could see that. I do think he's I think he's very well suited to like an outside zone scheme. I think that's where he really shines. He sees like those, I mean, he sees the cutback angles very well and hits them very quickly, and can kind of slither his way kind of through the trash on the way back out the other side. So I think he's really well suited to an outside zone running game. I definitely agree about the height at which he runs, the weight at which he probably plays. Like he's a skinny, relatively skinny running back, and he runs like it. And there were, you know, several times in his film where it was like, man, he looks like he could have gotten a few more yards out of that just by like driving his legs a little bit more, or like a cornerback took him down a little too easily. Like I think that's just not a big part of his game. And yeah, definitely could really limit him in short yard situations where like, you need to be able to run through an arm tackle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely, like Jacob, fear that he's going to end up like a complimentary back, right? I think that's his worst case scenario. Do you think that there's, or I should say, do you have a spot in mind that you think could unlock a player like him? Like even with his size and a little bit of, is there a kind of a, like how we kind of did with Corum, how there was a specific spot that you feel could unlock him. Is there a spot in mind for yourself that you think could kind of protect him against his own faults in a way?
Nothing is like jumping out to me. I'm trying to think of like outside zone offenses around the league and or specifically ones that don't really have an established running back. And I'm kind of drawing a blank. He feels Dallas-ish to me. As a, maybe just as like a Texas guy who it's, he seems like Jerry Jones would like him.
I think he's a staff connection there too.
Right. And he is kind of similar to Tony Pollard in some ways. Yeah. I think
that was the comp that hit me. I have him. My comp specifically was Tony Pollard, slightly closer to the good version than the wash version.
Yeah. But as a, you know, vaguely Tony Pollard-ish running back, Dallas, maybe schematically and, you know, kind of just the way the offense is constructed right now, maybe not a great scheme fit, but that seems like a place where he would get work. But yeah, I'm kind of drawing a blank on where it would be like a good
so you know,
felt like a good fit.
So I had Minnesota in mind because their lead back is a 1 year, $7 million deal, who is kind of a shifty runner with some really good pass catching prowess. I could see him sitting behind Aaron Jones for a year, and we're looking at a healthier, you know, much stronger back with opportunity. So for me, it was Minnesota. Obviously, the KOC system, the outside zone is mint. The backs are usually productive unless you're Alexander Mattison. Like even a cooked Dalvin Cook, right, was able to put up some points there. So for me, it was Minnesota. Jacob, I see you're like, you're half, you know.
Well, I'm just trying to think of a team, and I can't think of like a great team. That I would say like the hope would be for me that he goes somewhere that's pretty spread out, where he gets to operate in space, because to me that's where I think he's best. So I would hope he goes to like a pass first. I mean, the Chargers would be kind of a dream team for everybody. I think the Bengals would make a lot of sense, although then it would get kind of crowded. But I think he would show that he's better than Zach Moss and Chase Brown pretty quickly if that situation presented itself. Let's talk about the last of this top tier.
Yes.
And probably, I think to me, the most interesting guy to talk about, because I think his like strengths and weaknesses are the most apparent. Trey Benson. I would argue that his most impressive game that I watched of him also featured the worst play I've literally ever seen by a running back, which was his tape against the Florida Gators this year. What are your thoughts on Trey Benson and on big, fast running backs who go burr?
Yeah, I mean, another resolution of mine this year is to be much more open-minded and about fast running backs who go burr. And Trey Benson is definitely one of those guys. I think I was inclined to not like him when I was, you know, watching his film, but I am an appreciator, I think. In order to hit, I think, like, I keep making points about like coaching vibes and things like that, but I think with a player like this, you need somebody who's willing to live with, or to maybe be patient with like a young and, you know, talented player who needs to grow, and who's not going to be like the, you fumbled or you bounced a run that you shouldn't have, now you don't get to play for the rest of the game guy. Like if that's where Trey Benson ends up, I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, plays for 2 weeks and then loses his job to some, you know, Miles Gaskin type, because I think he's going to be frustrating in the same way that guys like Miles Sanders and Travis Etienne and DeAndre Swift have, and Kenneth Walker have been frustrating. But those guys, particularly like Etienne and Walker, have been good enough, you know, despite those things, or have done enough positive things to offset being frustrating. And I think are also on teams with like Pete Carroll's a player's coach. Like he's going to let Kenneth Walker make mistakes and grow. I think Trey Benson needs a situation kind of like that. Ideally, probably like a gap heavy scheme where he doesn't have to be making reads all the time from, you know, a bunch of different options. But yeah, on the other side of that, like I think there's a chance that he is just too frustrating to whatever, you know, offensive staff or head coach he ends up with, and he kind of loses opportunities because of it.
So I like Benson. I mean, I tend to be more prone to liking these higher variance running backs sometimes, although not all of them. But I like Benson, first of all, in this class, because I think it is kind of a low ceiling class overall. I think he's an exception to that. And that I think he provides sort of the most pop, or if he can put it together, I think he's pretty easy to dream on. You know, if we were playing that game, to me, the thing is, well, he, you know, he does what every like frustrated adult in a sitcom wants their like young teenager to do, and he makes better decisions. And then he all of a sudden becomes a really great running back. And I think with Benson, what I do really like about him, that I will emphasize, you can push back if you disagree with this from your view of his film. I think he has some intuitively strong qualities. I think that his preset from when he's receiving the ball and he's making his initial decisions is inconsistent to bad. But I think when he's actually already moving, I think he does some interesting things. I think he navigates his blocking with pretty good timing when he's like out moving towards the perimeter. I think he makes himself really small between holes, is able to navigate through those small spaces pretty naturally. And I think outside, he does, I think, a really, really great job of making his maneuvers in the open field in a way that doesn't completely decelerate himself, where he's not chopping up and then getting caught from behind because he beats one guy. He's like weaving through the defenders at full speed, and he's able to actually convert more of those big plays into massive plays or touchdowns than I think a lot of guys on top of just his speed. I saw him interviewed at the combine. They're asking like, what's your approach to running in the open field? And he was like, I just run. And I was like, that's like everything that I love about you and everything that I hate about you. He's like, yeah, like he just runs. Like he just runs. He doesn't stop running. He doesn't make a lot of moves. He just kind of goes. And I appreciate it. I think I actually kind of disagree with what you're saying with the gap scheme versus the zone scheme thing. I think he does best in motion. I think an object in motion stays in motion. I want to get him moving to the perimeter with a head of steam, navigating a convoy. Like I think some of his best reps to me are in the screen game where he has blockers in front of him and he's just sort of maneuvering in the open field. When he's asked, you know, run duo, pick this side or this side, like I think he's about as good at picking a side as someone doing the Monty Hall problem. Like I don't think he necessarily struggles the same consistent way. So I actually kind of disagree a little bit on the scheme fit. I do like him, and I am an optimist by nature, so that makes me excited about Trey Benson. I also agree, you know, there's a lot of red flags where he could fail. I will say this for the DeAndre Swift. Like, I've been kind of a Swift hater for a while, but as much as NFL teams keep giving up on him, other NFL teams keep giving him a chance. So, like, you can be – and he's, like, to me, like, one of the worst of this – archetype of running back, like certainly not the worst. Like the worst is like Kalen Ballage, who's like fundamentally can't play the position despite being athletic. But like of this tier of like good running backs who have massive flaws, I think Swift is one of the worst in that he pretty consistently grades out that he gives back more than he provides. But teams do seem to keep selling themselves on him, and teams do seem to value that explosion. And that's what you can't get necessarily out of some of these veterans and day three backs that you can get with Benson. So I'm more optimistic. I don't know. What do you guys think of all that? Rationalizations.
I think Benson's a Raven. Like, I think if you want to talk about a coaching staff that will work with him, let him make mistakes, and can get the most out of their backs, whether it's in space, in gap, or in zone, and you have a quarterback that can take pressure off of you and simplify your work, and you get to sit behind one of the goats and hopefully usurp the king, a la Game of Thrones style, you know, at the end of his career, I think that's the perfect spot. I think he's a third round pick that the Ravens would absolutely invest in, considering, look, I've made the joke since he signed, Derrick Henry has to survive the Ravens practice field before he can even, you know, show what he can do in that offense. And talk about an injury opportunity to absolutely be a top 10 running back as a rookie. I think Benson is a Raven. Whether it's I'm okay with it in the third round. Obviously, fan here, can't see the thing, but obviously big fan here, and I'm daydreaming a little bit, but I'd love to hear your take on that. I think they adapt their schemes well to their players. They get the most out of them, and talk about opportunity. I think it's there. I think he's in his rookie year, probably looking at sitting behind a very much established player, but talk about a coaching staff, like Noah said, that needs to be patient and be able to work with them. I mean, Trey Benson just seems like a Raven player to me.
Yeah, I that would be sexy. I mean, he can do the same point and shoot stuff that J.K. Dobbins was doing there for years. And I want to clarify my gap scheme thing. I don't want him running duo either. Like, I want him following pullers on like a power run or like counter or pin and pull or something. So I agree with you there.
Okay.
I also think on the same lines as like this, the Ravens offense. I don't want to sacrifice Devon Achane's ceiling, but Benson would be so fun on the Dolphins. He's so really fast. Would. They could just immediately get him into space. And he's so good at
draft
just kind
him,
of
draft worthy. Have like Benson, Achane.
Yeah, let's do it.
Theo Johnson. Just the whole gang.
I'm in.
Amazing. Yeah. I also agree that I don't want him to hurt Devon Achane's ceiling, but that would be pretty fun. That would be fun because, you know, they just give him like 13 touches each, and it's fine. They'll both be top 15 running backs. What about in this? How would you ultimately, if you don't mind giving it away, who is your favorite sight unseen? If you're doing a rookie draft right now, would be your RB1 in the class?
The guy I think is the best running back in the class is Blake Corum. The guy who I would take first in a rookie draft, probably either Brooks or Corum. And because I can't decide, I'll probably just go with the guy I think is best and go with Corum.
Yeah, go with your heart.
Go with your gut. I can't do that because my pick would be terrible, but I'm fine with that.
Who is it? Who is it?
Garendo. I'm in love. Yeah.
Like Garendo?
He's
I'm going with Benson for all
no,
this
it's
work.
Not
I have
like,
I can fix some energy, look, so I'm taking Benson.
Look, if I can sit here and be like, who do I love the most and want to take as the first running back? It's him.
Oh, okay,
I know
okay.
It would be awful.
Come on.
Right? But I've fallen in love with him, and I'm sad that he's not on your list for your next question because
he's fun.
You can add him to the list.
I love him.
I have him written down for part of my answer to the next question. So
yeah, he's okay. I've just fallen in love with him. Maybe it's because he's, you know, maybe I have like 1980s GM eyes on him. He's like big, fast, and could run one direction really hard. And I don't know. I like that. But yeah.
Fair enough.
I'm a little awestruck.
You know what? Like, it used to be kind of a meme that like the guy who we never heard of that ran really fast at the combine was never a thing. But it's kind of been a thing now, 2 years in a row. We got Pacheco and then we got Keaton Mitchell. So maybe
right.
maybe just like take the late dart on the guy who ran really fast is actually a decent strategy these days.
Look, I will take every opportunity to turn this into a Garendo podcast. Like, I'll do it for an hour. But if I get to hear more and more comps to Pacheco and I can get like 2 years use out of him,
let's move a little to the middle tier of this group. And I don't know if this is like, I just kind of sketched it out. Pick one, everybody, your favorite out of this mid group. If you want to add an honorable mention, feel free. Although we do have a question later for the remainders. Marshawn Lloyd, Jalen Wright, Braylon Allen, Bucky Irving, Will Shipley, Audric Estime, and Ray Davis. Those were the consensus RBs 4 through 10 on the big boards that I looked at. Pick one that you want to talk about that's your favorite, one that's your least. I think one will go untalked about. We got 7 running backs for 6 names here.
Okay. Well, first of all, I was looking at the wrong question. I am absolutely not talking about Isaac Garendo here. I don't have him in my middle tier.
Damn it!
My favorite guy in this tier is Marshawn Lloyd. He's my RB3 right now. Which is not behind the paywall, so I'm not giving away stuff there. Marshawn Lloyd is my RB3. He's got some Benson to him in his decision making, I think, but he also has some Benson to him in how just like explosive and athletic and hard to tackle he is out in space. And he was much bigger than I expected him to be at the combine, and still ran as fast as I probably would have guessed. Like I didn't know he could carry that kind of weight and move that well. And he already moves well, you know, when he was listed at, you know, 205 or 210 or whatever it was. And I think he's one of the better receivers in this class as far as the things you can ask him to do in terms of, you know, running routes and attacking coverage downfield and things like that. He had a little bit of a drops problem, but you know, we're supposed to not care about drops, so I'll
right.
ignore it.
Twitter.
But I do think he's very similar to like a DeAndre Swift type player. His size gives him access to like a David Johnson-ish ceiling and like the, you know, that if I could in my wildest dreams, he's David Johnson. I think
now we're playing the game that we were playing 20 minutes ago. talking about a ceiling. David Johnson. Let's go.
I'm not projecting that, but I you know, a 220-pound guy who runs sub 4.5.
Tom, clip it. Noah calls Marshawn Lloyd the second coming of David Johnson.
You know, I've already got it written down.
I'm not predicting it, but I'll stand behind that speculative ceiling. But even if he doesn't reach that, I see him as kind of a DeAndre Swift-ish guy. And at the very least, like, I don't see him being any worse than like Duke Johnson was. Like, he feels like a guy who's going to be like an athletic piece that teams want to get on the field for that reason, at the very least.
So far, he drops the ball, so he's Deontay Johnson. He has the exact profile of David Johnson. At worst, he's Duke Johnson. What does he do like D'Ernest Johnson? How many other D Johnsons can we call this guy to?
I mean, I'm
does
just a
fish?
Fan.
Does he fish for mahi-mahi in his spare time?
Who fishes for mahi-mahi?
This is a real D'Ernest Johnson story. He was fully out of football. He retired from football, and he was a fisherman. Fishing for mahi-mahi on Key West. And then he got a call and they were like, do you want to play in the USFL? And he was like, sure, I'll give it a shot. And then he was so good, the Browns were like, do you want to come to training camp?
Wow. I had no idea. That's crazy. I bet Marshawn Lloyd is a fisherman.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
The fisherman corollary for these running backs is going to be off the charts.
No. He's a 4-year prospect? He's the old man in the sea.
Yeah. There you go. Tom, who's your favorite?
Of this middle tier, it was Allen until I realized he's probably like a 4-8 runner, like as an offensive Allen? Lineman. At this point.
You can still pick him.
No, I'm just saying it because I've kind of hopped off that train, and I'm actually going to say Will Shipley, because I feel like in terms of receiving prowess, he's probably right up there at the top of the list for me. Bucky would have been if he didn't slog out his athletic testing, because I think he's a really good receiver as well. But I like Will Shipley. I think that, you know, if you were a diehard in the Devy community, you loved him a couple of years ago and you've just kind of soured on him since. But I think he does the things NFL GMs and coaches look for in a third down set, which, as Noah pointed out earlier, getting on the field and staying on the field in a role is important. I feel like he can be a special teams guy. He has the returner twitch. He can move it outside when you really need to. You're talking about a read option zone guy. He can do that as well. And like I said, I think he has some of the most natural route running out of the backfield, not just in a dump off situation, right? Because most running backs can handle a 2-yard dump off and turn it upfield. I mean, Gus Edwards was able to do that with success when he got the chance. I'm talking as a legitimate route runner. I think he's there. And I'm not really scared off by his size as well. I think he's one of the better all-around backs. Maybe he lacks a little bit of the explosiveness that we were really hoping for out of him a couple of years ago. But I'm very excited for Will Shipley. I see him as like a fourth, fifth round pick that gets on the field through special teams and really impresses an opportunity. So he's probably my favorite. And maybe I'm just horrendously off base. But
no, that was going to be my pick.
I really like Will Shipley. Yeah.
I was going to take Shipley. I agree with everything you said about the receiving. I think he has legitimate receiving polish and has like kind of enough of the rest that if forced upon him, I think he could hold up. And I'm a fan of him. That's probably gonna be one of my most drafted guys. I guess I'll stick in orange and I'll take the third of this like nutcracker doll of the explosion running backs and take Jalen Wright. I felt like I was early to the Jalen Wright party, and then the Jalen Wright party got really crazy really fast. Like, you know, when you're it's like freshman year in college, and you start handing off flyers, you go through the dorm, like, oh, party in 406, party in 406. And then at first, there's like only two people you're there, and you're just like sitting around with Steve, you're playing a radio ad, and no one's coming. You're like, oh, this sucks. And then you light up. And then an hour later, all of a sudden, it's a 300-person rager, and people are like doing cannonballs off your balcony, and you have 7 complaints. I think that's what happened to me with Jalen Wright. I put out one tweet. I was like, oh, I think he's a really nice click at ADP 210 in best ball. And then I like hibernated for a week. And the next thing I know, everybody's putting him RB2 in the class. I don't know what happened. All that being said, I do genuinely appreciate Jalen Wright. I think he's got absolute mad juice. He's one of the guys in this class that was consistently relied upon playing in receiving situations. I think he's a pretty willing pass blocker. I think he's a totally fine outlet receiver. I think he could be in use in that capacity in the NFL. I think his volume undertake is pretty limited as a rusher. I think ideally he's like a 10 to 12 carry a game speed complement. And I think in terms of how he's going to get used, I think you want him used in a pretty spread out system, because the Tennessee offense is like nothing you'll ever see in the NFL. And so trying to project what he can read and what decision-making he has in an NFL scheme is just kind of a black box, because you just don't really see that much of it. His film was hilarious because you know, it's literally like it's 5-on-5. It's like there's no chipper, there's no tight end, there's no sniffer, there's nothing, there's no F receiver. It's just 5 offensive linemen. As a result, it's usually 5 defensive linemen and then a bunch of like corners. And it's just like, do the Tennessee dudes block the other team's dudes? Yes, you have a 30-yard gain. No, you have a 3-yard loss. Like that's the Tennessee run game. And then it's Joe Milton like throwing lasers into the 7th row. So I think that would be the pick, just because I think the NFL is, you know, moving towards more of a committee structure. To me, he fits really naturally as like the 45% of a committee who will get to play right away. But I had Shipley stolen from me. Do you have any takes on either the Wright or the Shipley stuff, Noah, before we talk
about
these
guys? Yeah, I do. I'm happy that you guys are both fans of them because I also am a Jalen Wright appreciator and a tentative Will Shipley appreciator. I think I was pretty down on Will Shipley. Like he's always been like a guy that struck me as overrated just based on his numbers. And so I came into his film thinking like, all right, this guy's going to be like boring and kind of suck. I watched his game against North Carolina from this last year. The only one I've watched yet so far, but he was fantastic. Like I thought he was not running into, you know, a ton of defensive, you know, attention at the line of scrimmage, but good at setting up his blocks. He made good reads, really nice out in space. Good receiver. He had like a diving catch, like 60 yards downfield. He was kind of like if Marshawn Lloyd like followed the rules, which is a really interesting player. So I don't anticipate that game necessarily being representative of the rest of his season because I know that he had kind of a rough year. So I'm wary of what the rest of his tape will look like, but super pumped on him based on that. And then I pretty much completely agree with everything you said about Jalen Wright. He also, in addition to just being fast, he's got fantastic contact balance. I've seen the Alvin Kamara comp and I don't agree with it in every way, but he does kind of have the same sort of like Gumby thing where you just hit him and he goes kind of limp or it just kind of bounces off of you. So I like both of those calls.
We'll snake
makes me feel better
for the hater. And I'm a Braylon Allen hater. Pretty vocally. I get that I will upset the data community because like just objectively, like if we were just purely putting them on a spreadsheet, he's probably like the RB1 in this class in terms of like his early production, adds the receiving element in the final year in terms of just the raw reception share, still extremely young, obviously checks every possible size thing on earth. Even if he runs a 4.7, he probably has an 80th percentile speed score. He's such a big dude. My issue with Braylon Allen is that I just like fundamentally don't think that he has the twitch to play effective running back in the NFL. I think that he takes too long to build up to speed. I don't think he has the top end speed that it's like worth it to sort of funnel him carries in hopes that he eventually gets a clean runway. I think that he succeeds as a tackle breaker mostly just by virtue of brute force, but I don't think that he actually adds much in terms of technique or in terms of like how he approaches those engagements. His overall tackle evasion rate per touch is like sub the average within the top guys in this class, which is pretty stunning when you consider just how large of a dude he is. And then for a massive guy, like this just like tilts me in a way that maybe is irrational. In my opinion, he has like the worst pass protection technique I've literally ever watched. Like he just throws himself at dudes.
It's You've never seen my tape.
He's larger than most middle linebackers. And he has like no concept of how to approach those engagements. So I don't care about how many receptions he had this year. I don't think this guy's ever playing in a passing situation just based on how far he has to go as a pass protector. And as a rusher, to me, he's so one-dimensional where like almost all he's adding is like a short yardage grinder who I don't even know how powerful he is against NFL athletes because he plays so tall and is so tall. So I don't really like anything about Braylon Allen's game other than his production profile. Curious what you guys think of Allen, who's still only 17 years old.
I've been really torn on Braylon Allen. I think when I watched him for the first time like a year ago, I was so impressed with how fluid he was as an athlete and how like how well he navigated kind of like the you know blocks on the interior. He did it like a guy that was like much smaller in my view. And I was like very impressed with him because of that, but so many people think otherwise that they think he's limited laterally and you know slow to get up to speed, which I wouldn't necessarily dispute that. But people are so much less impressed with his physical you know ability or his athletic ability than I am. Before we hopped on, I watched him against Illinois from this last year. And I was impressed again. Like there was first of all, I do think he does not run nearly as powerfully as you would expect for a guy his size. Like he has that AJ Dillon thing where he just goes down way too easily for how big he is. But I don't think he does the AJ Dillon thing where he like runs like his feet are in mud. There was a play in the Illinois game, and I only watched like the first 4 minutes. It was like he only had like 10 touches. There was a play where he had like a one-on-one out in space with a linebacker. He threw him like a little hezzy, and the guy like completely whiffed. That was a pretty nice move, I thought. There was another play. I don't know if it was like a gap run or an outside zone run, but he was kind of tracking to the outside and made – this is something that Matt Waldman focuses on a lot. Like how many steps does a guy take to transition from moving laterally to moving north-south? And, you know, you want as few steps as possible. And Dylan did it in like a gallop and go, just kind of like hopped and turned. And it was and that kind of stuck out to me as impressive. So I'm wary of my own evaluation of him because so many other people have like the opposite take. But I do agree that he can't play on third downs. He's not a receiver. And if he can't pass protect, like there's no reason to have him on the field in those situations. But
you heard me rewatch this Illinois game at the very least, but I did watch this game. I watched, I think, one or two games for his 2022 season. I watched half the games of his 2023 season, and the Illinois game included. And I tried to look if I had my notes separated by game. Unfortunately, I didn't. They were just like a log of notes, so I don't know specifically which ones are from the Illinois game. But I will rewatch at least two Braylon Allen games before I next talk to you, and we'll see. I'll look to potentially take some stuff back. I do think I don't think he's like a dumb runner. Like I think he does know how to play the position for sure. Like I think I see like pretty reasonable decision making. I think he knows how to like identify where he should go. I don't like the athleticism, but you know, you mentioned you do, and I have seen other people do, to be fair. Like I think it's split. So it's worth another look for me at the very least.
Yeah, and it's possible that like being, you know, what I'm seeing is like he's smooth for his size, kind of, and maybe for his size is just doing like a lot of work on my perception of him. And he's, you know, even though he might be smooth for his size, like he's not actually smooth for an NFL, you know, caliber running back. That's certainly possible. But yeah, I have been, you know, at least on a size, you know, kind of graded on a sliding scale there, I've been impressed. Well,
and I'll argue against myself here. One of the things that I tend to criticize some like film watchers with the receiver position is oftentimes I'll see some of these larger receivers constantly get knocked on their route running and on their separation ability. And my argument to that is like, well, of course, like a 6'4", 220 pound guy is not going to be able to be like the technician on like a drill at the Senior Bowl that a 5'8", 170 pound guy can, but being 6'4", 220 pounds like also has its advantages. And, you know, I'm probably being a little bit hypocritical of that with respect to Allen, where maybe, you know, I'm knocking him for not being as physical as he should be for a guy that's as big, but maybe not then giving him the grace that he deserves on the flip side in terms of his twitch ability. But nonetheless, I've claimed him as my hate in this tier. tell who you got and then know to close.
I will just say that I think an NFL team is going to fall in love with him, just young, big, and productive. I think someone is going to fall in love with him, and then someone is going to bench him faster than they fell in love with him. So I think that's a real possibility. As for my least favorite, it's going to be Bucky Boy. It's going to be Bucky Irving. I think he's going.
I really like him.
Nah, you see, and it's not even because I necessarily
good guy, hate the player. He tries hard, he loves the game.
Yeah, first guy in, last guy out, real good work ethic, a grinder, a dog, some might say. But my issue with him is not totally about how I feel with him as a player. And I'll explain this as I feel like the dynasty community is going to make me dislike him more than I want to. Like he's not going to be a player that I have zero shares of. So as much as like I'll be completely upfront, I am not a rookie scout. That is not something that I am top tier at doing in this game. My strength comes from dynasty market evaluation. And I have already seen, and it's already been brought to my attention that, well, Kyren Williams was able to beat out the accusations. And, you know, that means Bucky can too. Kyren Williams had to have an amazing set of circumstances fall his way for him to beat this. I see him as a total outlier type player from his size, his athleticism. It's all outlierish to me for a top tier ceiling. And I really feel like he is going to get bumped up a lot by the Dynasty community simply because, well, Kyren did it. So that's why I dislike him the most. It's not a tape. It's not a film type thing. It's not even his data profile. It is simply how I feel he's going to be my least favorite in the market for the reason that it's outlier chasing from the year before. Right. So that's why I dislike him personally. I will be the first to tell you, I'm not going to lie to listeners and Fantasy Point subscribers and be like, I've done all the scouting. I haven't. But just from what I understand from the market, what I'm seeing in rookie drafts or startup drafts that I'm doing now, he is getting an outlier bump. So for me, the Dynasty community is making me turn on him. We'll see what the NFL feels about him, but he's going to be my least favorite in this group.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree that he's not Kyren Williams. I think he enters the league with much less of a resume as a traditional runner than Kyren Williams did. I do think he can be a James White, not that productive probably. James White was ridiculously productive for a satellite back, but I do think Bucky Irvin can do like James White-ish stuff. I think Jacob made a good point when I was originally talking about this on Twitter right after the combine that, like, is that really a role that exists in today's NFL with how many like mobile quarterbacks there are and teams there aren't many guys out there in the league who are just playing on third downs like Tariq Cohen did. So I also would be down on Bucky Irving as a fantasy asset because of that, even though I think he's a good player who maybe 10 years ago would have been useful in fantasy. My least favorite player in this group is Ray Davis, which isn't saying a lot, I think, because of all the guys we named, I'm more or less a fan of all of them as players. And I like Ray Davis as well. I think I was kind of surprised when I watched him. I hadn't seen Ray Davis play really. He's such a like jittery guy. Like he's so kind of bouncy side to side and has a low center of gravity. The Jaylen Warren comps are I think really easy, but I also think they make sense. Like they're both small ish guys, stout. I thought Ray Davis caught the ball really nicely. Was mm-hmm. pretty good out in space. Kind of bursty and explosive. I don't love him as a traditional runner on the inside, but I do think he's enough of like a jack of all trades to end up on the field or, you know, to, I think he's got that kind of football character thing that Blake Corum has where he's going to, you know, try on special teams and things like that. So he's a guy who's not an elite prospect, but who I could see just earning himself a role. But I guess by default, he's my least favorite player in this group because I don't think he's that good. He's kind of Chase Brown.
In fairness, we left you him versus Audric Estime. So really, all you're saying is you like him less than Audric Estime.
Right, and I'm an Audric Estime fan. So
yeah, you want to give 5 seconds on Audric Estime since so he doesn't get fully left out.
Yeah, Audric Estime. Ran faster on the actual football field than he did in shorts. He ran just as fast.
You have to take a drink. You're officially any hopes like you used to do that. I'm not really a film bro thing. Any hopes of pulling off that when you say, look, he looked faster on the field than when he was wearing shorts.
Hey, No. This is not, he looked through. Faster. This is Real Sports Analytics or whatever the hell that company is. They have a video on Twitter where he's running 20.5 miles an hour and I'm taking it as gospel. That's all I'm saying.
For the record, legit. I agree. I hate myself when I make this point, but I fully agree that especially you look at his explosive rate, like he has one of the higher explosive run rates in the class. His ability to turn those 20-yard gains into 80-yard gains, probably not. But his ability to actually create chunk plays, like he's demonstrated that he can do it against top competition better than a lot of faster guys. So I'll give him that credit.
Well, and it's something too. How often do you see a running back actually turn that 80-yard play? You really are looking for 15 to 25.
Go watch the Trey Benson film.
In the NFL, Jacob. Come on now.
Yeah, fair enough. Go watch them down on HN, NFL film, every second play.
Yeah, Estime's not doing that jet sweep stuff, but...
No.
But I do think, on top of being, I think, not, you know, necessarily a slow running back like he seemed to be at the combine, I was I was blown away by his film, really. I was shocked that he – I think this is less controversial to say about him than it is about Braylon Allen, but he's just incredibly smooth for his size. He moves so well. He's laterally quick, and he kind of – like when I was watching his film, I asked myself multiple times, like, is he a better pure runner as far as like making good decisions than Blake Corum? Like that was that kind of that question struck me. Like, I think he's just a good running back in the same way that like Alfred Morris was, or like these guys who can just play.
I was going to bring up the Morris. Yeah. That's like, I mean, it's kind of a go-to for like a slow dude who really worked out, but I do see a little bit of that for sure. In terms of your final dart throw, everybody gets one. Running back we've not talked about, so outside of the consensus top 10, you're most interested in clicking the name of as a late round dart. You know, I know Tom's taking Isaac Arendo here, but anybody else on your guys' list?
Yeah, this is a guy who I was completely off of, I guess before the combine, which is a really, what an embarrassing thing to say, but Kamani Vidal or Vidal, I'm not sure how you say his last name, but
yeah,
he's built like a tank. Like he's about as short as Blake Corum is. He's thicker. He ran well in the 40. He's got like almost 80th percentile numbers in the jumps and the agility drills. Like his closest physical comps, which is like height and weight and density plus athletic testing numbers. His closest physical comps in my database include Julius Jones, Bijan Robinson, Lamar Miller, DeAndre Swift. Like he's a fantastic athlete. And has good size and ran for two straight seasons of over 1,000 yards on Troy teams that were pretty good. They finished ranked 19th in the country in 2022. They went 11-3 in 2023. I think he's a little bit sluggish in the way that he, you know, kind of slides around blocks or changes directions in the backfield. A little bit sluggish there, so I'm a little bit surprised that he was so good in the agility drills. But otherwise, like he broke a lot of tackles. His 10-yard run rate is good, despite the fact that he had the most carries in the country this year. And Blake Corum was the only guy in the top 10 in carries who was seeing heavier defensive fronts than Kamani Vidal was. And Kamani Vidal was playing behind an offensive line that ranked 115th in PFF's run blocking grade. So like the cards were absolutely stacked against this guy, and he was breaking a ton of tackles. Out of 27 running backs with 200 or more attempts, he ranked 12th in yards after contact per attempt, which obviously isn't elite, but given the circumstances, to be in the top half of that group is pretty impressive. And he was also in the top half of that group in 10-yard run rate, higher than both Amarion Hampton and Ollie Gordon. So he was killing it in his situation. And he caught 92 passes in his career. He's got fun film. He's also just excellent at like being where he needs to be, reading, pressing to his blockers, and then going after a guy kind of vacates. Again, he's a little clunky in transitioning, but he is just a load to tackle. Like he's so far in my charting, I think charted two games of him, but his like ability to power through contact versus defensive linemen is second to only Roshan Johnson among guys that I've watched in the last 2 years. So he was really impressive to me on film and has a nice athletic and production profile.
Awesome. Tom?
I mean, I hate following up Noah because when he says he likes somebody, he brings the house and I'm over here about to just give you vibes, right? So, I mean, it's really going to show why.
We're the ones who brought Noah on the show, so really responsible for all his good takes for our listeners.
True, right. I get to absorb them as my own at this point. That's how this works. So obviously that's how it's going to be. But on a pure vibes standpoint, as I mentioned before, not have done these deep dives on this rookie class to this point, it's Frank Gore Jr. Not only do I think he's just going to get drafted because of his lineage, I just really feel like that's the case. He's a durable player, right? He's big workload in college, was productive consistently, lacks a little bit in the running game, didn't test, but I'm sure we know his athleticism is not going to be in that upper tier. But he is one of those, right, not just for jokes, first guy in, last guy out, pure vibes, a pure ball player, special teams guy when needed. And I could definitely see him getting himself onto the field in a backup role. How that works for your fantasy team could end up being in a Zamir White situation where drafted guy gets hurt, they move off him, gets a chance, and if he shines, there's your value. I think he's worth picking up. I think you'll go undrafted in your rookie drafts, but one of the first people I'm running to the waiver wire as of right now is going to be Frank Gore Jr., and I'm going to be pretty happy with that, even if you get a week or two out of him.
Well, first off, to follow up Tom's point, thank you, Noah, for keeping with us for 90 minutes. It's massively appreciated. You could have left at any point. And I think everybody knows how much I think of Noah's work, especially by the fact that this was probably one of the first podcasts in Full Tilt / Dynasty Point history, probably like setting a career low in percentage talked per episode. So that's a sign of really how much I want to hear what the guest is saying when I'm being this deferential. My contribution here, and again, seems like this is kind of becoming every guy's guy, but Isaiah Davis continues to be the guy that I keep preaching the good word of at the bottom of this running back class. Extraordinarily productive, has up over 5,000 career rushing yards, averaged over 6.6 yards per carry across 4 years in college, two seasons over 20 receptions. He also brings legitimate size, lifts up 6'1", 220 pounds, comes in through. When you watch him, and admittedly, like, it's pretty hard to track down Isaiah Davis film. So like most of the Isaiah Davis that I'm watching is YouTube. but I will say, like, when I do get the chance to watch him, I think that he has, like, it's always hard to tell how much athletic juice a guy has when they play at South Dakota State. There's the rub, he played at South Dakota State. because they're primarily being measured athletically against future mechanics and accountants. But he did have an adequate athletic profile going to the combine for his size, where he gets in there in the 4.5s. I think he has enough twitch to him, especially combined with his size and his ability to evade tacklers, that I think is legitimately interesting. And he brings sort of an all-around profile and a really strong production profile. No idea where he's going to get drafted, but he strikes me as one of those backups where if he gets thrust into action, I do have some level of faith that I think he could make it work, especially in fantasy context. That's everything on the show sheet. So do you have a final word on Gore Jr. or Davis or anybody else you wanted to chat about before you get on with the rest of your evening?
Yeah, I need to go back and watch Davis again. He's a guy that didn't capture my imagination when I first watched him. I guess I viewed him as like maybe a, like at his peak, maybe a Tyler Allgeier in the NFL. And that's not necessarily that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Fourth round.
That's not necessarily a bad thing. But Frank Gore Jr., I haven't watched yet, but I actually really liked his like rushing efficiency profile. I think he had some up and down years, but I think you can kind of piece together based on how the offensive line looked. Like, you can tell yourself a story of why his numbers were the way they were. But yeah, I think his profile is pretty like Jeff Wilson-y. I wouldn't be surprised to see Frank Gore Jr. being like an actual contributor, even if that doesn't look like, you know, a fantasy guy. But I think he can run the ball.
Any final thoughts? Who's winning March Madness this year? No.
Oh God, I haven't even looked at a bracket, but UConn. That seems like a good answer, I guess. UConn.
Safe pick. 22% of brackets so far have UConn, so nice. Solid pick. Tom, who you got?
I don't watch college basketball. I barely have enough time to get through rookie scouting here at this point. But I just feel like Duke's good at college basketball, right? Like that's
They're in the mix this year.
There you go. They're in the Duke, tournament. Baby. All Duke. Let's go, Blue Devils. Yeah. Let's go.
I mean, I got to close with, you know, I got to spread the good word of Dalton Connect and the University of Tennessee Volunteers. Bring it down this year. We finally got a guy for my adopted American college team that I root for no particular reason other than the Peyton Manning played there. You know, this is the year that Rick Barnes finally gets to the Final Four. He finally has his go-to guy in crunch time when the offense stalls out. Number 3 rated defense, according to Ken Pom. I think they have a good draw. Bring it home this year, UT. Anything you want to plug before we head off, Noah? Where can people find your stuff?
You could find me tweeting occasionally these days at Noah More Parties. And you can find my written work and my running back rankings at noahmoreparties.com.
Yeah, it's an instant sub. It's an instant sub. Links will be in the description, right, of the video. If you haven't checked it out already, please do so. Jacob?
Find my stuff on Thinking About Thinking. Have a couple posts out recently. They're going to keep getting more and more active as we get closer and closer to the draft. So keep your eyes over there. And, you know, me and Tom will be back every week with another great guest all the way up until draft night.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, big shout out again, Noah. I think this is the third time we've managed to grab you onto the show, and I've loved every single one of them.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is third. And yeah, no, I was happy to come on. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
100%.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, it was great. And again, your time, man. I mean, we went long, but we love it. We appreciate it.
Fantastic.
We actually did the whole show sheet. I think that's pretty rare for anytime I do a show sheet. Like when Tom does a show sheet, he actually does hour long show sheets. The rule is if whoever reaches out to the guest of the show sheet, and my show sheets tend to be like 2 hours long, and then we get through half of them. But we completed it, not on time, but we did complete it.
I know the listeners are going to be very appreciative. And again, if you haven't already, you're going to want to head over to Fantasy Points. If you're watching on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, you can head over to the YouTube channel, Fantasy Points. Obviously, subscribe to fantasypoints.com. Lots of great stuff. Relaunching the Discord coming up soon. Can't wait for that. Of course, like Jacob mentioned, Scott Barrett, JJ Zacharyson, and more. Coming up to the draft, doing draft content a little bit different for Dynasty Points than we did Full Tilt. You are not going to want to miss it. So get locked in. Of course, remember to check in on your loved ones, even if you are not sure that they need it. Remember that clear eyes and full hearts can never lose in your best days. Well, goddamn, they're always spend tilting. Good night, everybody.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.